ஸ்ரீ ரமண கீதா சாப்டர் 1 டைட்டில் ஆன் தி இம்பார்ட்டன்ஸ் ஆஃப் உபாசனா பீயிங் சீட்டட் நியர் தட் இஸ் மெடிடேஷன் ஆன் தி இம்பார்ட்டன்ஸ் ஆஃப் மெடிடேஷன் ஐ பவ் டு மகர்ஷி ரமணா கார்த்திகேயா இன் ஹியூமன் ஃபார்ம் அண்ட் செட் ஃபோர்த் ஹிஸ் டீச்சிங் இன் திஸ் லூசிட் ஒர்க். In the year 1913 of the Christian era, on the 29th of cold December, when all the disciples were seated around with attentive minds, I asked Bhagavan Maharishi for definite answers to certain questions. Questions: Is mukti, that is release from phenomenal existence, to be attained by mere discrimination between the real and the unreal? Or are there other means for the removal of bondage? Is study of the scriptures enough by itself to liberate those desirous of knowledge? Or is spiritual practice according to the master's injunctions also necessary? How does a sthita prajna, that is one of steadfast knowledge, recognize himself as such? Is it by knowing the fullness of his enlightenment, or is it by cessation of objective awareness? By what indication are the learned able to recognize the jnani? Does samadhi, that is absorption of the mind in the self, lead only to jnana, or does it also confer the material fruit desired? If one practicing yoga for a desired end becomes a sthita prajna, is that desire also fulfilled or not? Hearing these questions of mine, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Rishi, to dispel my doubts and in the plenitude of his grace, spoke thus: Abidance in the self alone releases one from all bonds. Discrimination between the real and the unreal leads to non-attachment. The jnani is unfathomable. He abides always in the self alone. He does not consider the universe as unreal or as different from himself. The seeker of knowledge does not achieve his end merely by a study of the scriptures. Without upasana, there cannot be attainment for him. This is definite. Experiencing the natural state during spiritual practice is called upasana, and when that state becomes firm and permanent, that itself is called jnana. When discarding sense objects, one abides in one's own true nature as a flame of jnana. This state of being is termed sagaja sthiti. In the firm natural state, through that supreme silence free from all vasanas, that is predispositions, tendencies or propensities of the mind, the jnani knows himself as such without any doubt. From the mark of equality towards all beings, one's attainment of jnana is inferred. When practice of samadhi is begun with a desire, the desire also will surely bear fruit. In practicing yoga with a desire, if one becomes a sthita prajna, one is not elated though the desire is fulfilled. End of first chapter with 17 verses. Chapter 2, Margatrayam, the three paths. In the year 1915, Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi uttered in a verse the essence of his teaching. ஹிருதய குஹர மத்யே கேவலம் பிரம்ம மாத்ரம் யஹமஹமிதி சாக்ஷாத் ஆத்மரூபேண பாதி ஹிருதி விஷமனசாஸ்வம் சின்வதா மஜ்ஜதாவா பவனசலன ரோதாத் ஆத்மநிஷ்டோ பவத்வம். இன் தி இன்டீரியர் ஆஃப் தி ஹாட் கேவ் பிரம்மன் அலோன் ஷைன்ஸ் இன் தி ஃபார்ம் ஆஃப் தி ஆத்மன் வித் டைரக்ட் இம்மீடியசி ஆஸ் ஐ Enter into the heart with questing mind, or by diving deep within, or with control of breath and abide in the Atman. Whoever understands this verse, the essence of Vedanta, uttered by Bhagavan Maharishi, will never again be assailed by doubt. In the first half of this verse, Bhagavan has pointed out the location of the self in this visible body of five elements. There itself, identification of the self is affirmed, difference from God is denied, and direct experience is affirmed, thus dismissing the various descriptive marks of the self. In the second half, instruction is given for the practice by the disciple of three different methods, which are in essence one. The first path termed Margana, quest. The second, Majjana, diving in. The third, Prana Rodha, control of breath. End of chapter 2 with the 7 verses. Chapter 3, Mukhya Kartavyam, the paramount task. In this chapter, we record for the delight of the wise the conversation between Daivarata and Acharya Ramana. Daivarata: in samsara, that is life in the world, what is the paramount task of a man? May Bhagavan be pleased to decide and explain it to me. Bhagavan: the aspirant has to discover his own real nature, which is the basis of all actions and their fruit. Daivarata: what in brief is the means to know one's own real nature? What is the effort that can bring about the sublime inner vision? Bhagavan: sternly withdrawing all thoughts from sense objects, one should remain fixed in steady, non-objective enquiry. This in brief is the means of knowing one's own real nature. This effort alone brings about the sublime inner vision. Daivarata: O best of sages, will niyamas, that is rules of conduct, continue to aid spiritual effort until success in yoga is achieved? Bhagavan: niyamas do help the earnest efforts of aspirants. These niyamas drop away of their own accord from those who have attained success and have nothing more to do. Daivarata: thus repetition of mantras bring about the same result as the study practice of pure non-objective inquiry? Bhagavan: success stands the earnest seekers who incessantly and with a steady mind repeat mantras or pranava, omkara, the syllable om as representing the ever-fresh reality. By repetition of mantras or of pure pranava, om alone, one's mind is withdrawn from sense objects and becomes identical with one's own real being. This marvelous conversation took place on the 7th day of July 1917. End of chapter 3 with 12 verses. Chapter 4, Jnana Swarupam, the nature of Jnana. First question: O best of sages, what is Jnana? Is it the vritti I am Brahman, or Brahman is I, or I am all? Or is it the vritti all this is Brahman, or is Jnana different from these four vrittis? Bhagavan Ramana Muni, my guru, graciously listened to this inquiry of his disciple and spoke thus. Bhagavan: all these vrittis are doubtless mere concepts of the mind. The wise say that pure abidance in the self alone is jnana. Hearing these doubt-dispelling words of the guru, another doubt arose and I questioned him again. O Lord of sages, can Brahman be comprehended by vritti? May you be pleased to dispel this doubt arising in my mind. Hearing this question, the rishi, friend of those who adore his feet, bathed me with his glance and spoke thus: "If vritti proceeds to comprehend Brahman, which is one's own self, it takes the form of the self and loses its separate existence." This brief thrilling conversation took place between us on the 21st of July 1917. End of chapter 4 with 9 verses. Chapter 5. Hridaya Vidya, the science of the heart. In the year 1917, on the night of the 9th of August, Ramana Muni spoke exhaustively regarding the heart. That from which all thoughts of embodied beings issue forth is called the heart. All descriptions of it are only mental concepts. The I thought is said to be the root of all thoughts. In brief, that from which the I thought springs forth is the heart. If the heart be located in Anahata Chakra, how does the practice of yoga begin in Mooladhara? Note, in Yoga Shastra, Anahata is the fourth and Mooladhara is the first and the lowest of the centers in the spinal cord. This heart is different from the blood circulating organ. Hridayam stands for Hrit, the center which sucks in everything, and Ayam, this, and it thus stands for the self. The location of this heart is on the right side of the chest, not at all on the left. The light of awareness flows from the heart through Sushumna to Sahasrara, the thousand-petaled center. From there, it flows to the entire body, and then all experiences of the world arise. Viewing them as different from the light, one gets caught up in samsara, in phenomenal existence. The Sahasrara of one who abides in the self is nothing but pure light. Any thought that approaches it cannot survive. Even when object, owing to its nearness, is sensed by the mind, it is no hindrance to yoga, as the mind perceives no differences. The state in which awareness is firm and one-pointed, even when objects are sensed, is called Sahajasthiti. The state in which objects are absent is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. The whole universe is in the body, and the whole body is in the heart. Hence, all the universe is contained in the heart. The universe is nothing but the mind, and the mind is nothing but the heart. Thus, the entire story of the universe culminates in the heart. The heart is to the body what the sun is to the world. The mind in Sahasrara is like the orb of the moon in the world. As the sun gives light to the moon, even so this heart gives light to the mind. A mortal absent from the heart perceives only the mind, just as the light of the moon is perceived at night in the absence of the sun. Not perceiving that the true source of light is one's own self, and mentally perceiving objects as apart from oneself, the ignorant one is deluded. The jnani present in the heart sees the light of the mind merged in the light of the heart, like moonlight in daylight. The wise know that the superficial meaning of prajnana is mind, and its true meaning is the heart. The supreme is nothing but the heart. The notion that the seer is different from the seen is only in the mind. For those that abide in the heart, the seer and the seen are one. The thought process arrested during swoon, sleep, excessive joy or sorrow, fear and so on, goes back to its source, the heart. The ignorant one does not know that at such times thought has entered the heart, but one in samadhi knows it. Hence arises the difference in names. End of chapter 5 with 21 verses. Chapter 6. Mano Nigraha Upayam. Mind control. Having thus explained the truth regarding the heart, Sri Ramana Muni, the best among the knowers of truth, spoke of the method of controlling the mind. Men attached to sense objects, ever obsessed by thought, find it difficult to control the mind because of the strength of their vasanas, inherent tendencies. One should control the fickle mind by controlling the breath, and then it, like a tethered animal, ceases to stray. With the control of breath, control of thoughts also is achieved. When thoughts are controlled, one stands established at their source. Control of breath means merely watching with the mind the flow of breath. Through such constant watching, kumbhaka does come about. For those unable to achieve kumbhaka this way, the method of hatha yoga is prescribed. That is, rechaka exhalation should be done for 1 unit of time, puraka inhalation for 1 unit, and kumbhaka retention for 4 units. Thus, the channels of the life force are purified. When they become pure, the breath gets controlled gradually. Complete control of breath is called Shuddha Kumbhaka. Others, that is jnanis, define rechaka as giving up the idea, I am the body, puraka as the quest for the self, and kumbhaka as sagajasthiti or abidance in the self. Also, by repetition of mantras, the mind gets controlled. Then the mantra becomes one with the mind and also with the prana, the life force which causes the movements of the various organs of the body. When the syllables of the mantra become one with the prana, it is termed dhyana. And when dhyana becomes deep and firm, it leads to sagajasthiti. Also, by constant association with great enlightened seers, the mind gets merged in its own source. End of chapter 6 with 12 verses. Chapter 7. Atma Vichara Adhikari Anga Nirupana. Self-inquiry, competence and constituents. This 7th chapter records the excellent conversation between Karshini of Bharadwaji line and Acharya Ramana. Karshini: what is the nature of self-inquiry? What is its purpose? Is there any greater good obtainable by other means? Bhagavan: the I thought is said to be the sum total of all thoughts. The source of the I thought has to be inquired into. This is self-inquiry and not the study of scriptures. When the source is searched for, the ego gets merged in it. When the ego, which is mere reflection of the self, totally disappears, what remains is the true self alone in all its plenitude and perfection. The result of self-inquiry is freedom from all suffering. This is the highest of all fruits. There is nothing higher than this. Marvelous occult powers may be had through other means, but in the end, freedom can come only through self-inquiry. Karshini: who is considered fit for this inquiry? Can one by oneself know one's own fitness? Bhagavan: he whose mind has been purified through upasana and other means, or by merit acquired in past lives, who perceives the imperfections of the body and sense objects, and feels utter distaste whenever his mind has to function among sense objects, and who realizes that the body is impermanent, he is said to be a fit person for self-inquiry. By these two signs, that is, by a sense of the transitoriness of the body and by non-attachment to sense objects, one's own fitness for self-inquiry can be known. Karshni. When one is fit for self-inquiry, by his non-attachment for sense objects and by discrimination, are essential baths, sandhya, repetition of mantras, ablutions poured into the fire, chanting of Vedas, worship of gods, bhajan, pilgrimage, sacrifice, giving in charity, and observance of special spiritual practices, etc., of any use, or are they a mere waste of time? Bhagavan. For competent beginners, with waning attachments, all these aids will make the mind increasingly pure. Virtuous activity of mind, speech, and body destroys the contrary activity of mind, speech, and body. All this virtuous activity of competent persons, mature and endowed with minds of highest purity, benefits the world. Men of mature wisdom perform action for helping by example and for the welfare of others, not out of fear of violating scriptural injunctions. Virtuous actions performed without a sense of difference and without attachment do not stand, O best of men, in the way of self-inquiry. The non-performance of prescribed actions by a mature person pursuing self-inquiry is no sin, for self-inquiry is itself the most meritorious and most purifying of actions. Two ways of life are seen in the mature among competent seekers: renunciation of action for solitary communion and action for the good of others. Karshni. If besides self-inquiry there be another way to nirvana, is it one or varied? May Bhagavan be pleased to tell me. Bhagavan. One strives to attain something, the other seeks the one who strives to attain. The former takes longer time and in the end attains the self. The mind of one meditating on a single object becomes one-pointed, and one-pointedness of mind leads to abidance in the self. One who meditates attains, even without desiring it, abidance in the self. The seeker, on the other hand, knowingly abides in the self. The deity, mantra, or any other excellent object on which one meditates merges in the end in the great effulgence of the self. The goal is thus the same both for the one who meditates and the one who practices self-inquiry. One attains stillness through meditation, the other through knowledge. End of chapter 7, 26 verses. Chapter 8, Ashrama Vicharam, on the stages of life. In reply to another question of the same Karshni, Bhagavan explained the duties connected with the four ashramas, that is, stages of life. Whether one is a bachelor or a householder, a forest dweller or a sannyasin, or a woman or a sudra, whoever is ripe and fit may inquire about Brahman. The order of the ashramas serves like a flight of steps to attain the Supreme. For one of very mature mind, this order does not apply. This order has been prescribed so that the affairs of the world may go on smoothly. The duties of the first three ashramas are not opposed to jnana. Sannyasa is pure jnana and nothing to do with the akar robe or a shaven head. However, this ashrama is meant to ward off various hindrances on one's path. One whose energy is well developed through discipline, learning, and growth in knowledge in the Brahmacharya stage itself shines forth all the more in later life. By purity in Brahmacharya, one attains purity in the householder stage. This householder's ashrama is for the benefit of all. Even for the householder, if he be completely non-attached, the Supreme Light shines forth without any doubt. The learned prescribe the third ashrama for tapas, that is spiritual effort. In this ashrama, one may be with or without one's wife. To the yogi of mature mind, whose sins have been burnt away by tapas, the fourth ashrama comes of its own accord in due time. This teaching in the 7th and 8th chapters was given by Bhagavan on the 12th of August in the year 1917. End of chapter 8, 11 verses. Chapter 9, Grandhi Bedam Vodal, on cutting the knot. On the night of the 14th August, I put a question to Maharishi regarding Grandhi Bheda, on which even the learned have doubts. The effulgent Bhagavan Sri Ramana Rishi listened to my question, thought for a while, and in his divine way spoke. The nexus of the body and the self is called Granthi. It is only by this connection with the self that one is aware of the body. This body is insentient. The self is pure awareness. The connection between the two is deduced through the intellect. O child, enveloped by the diffused light of pure awareness, the body functions. Owing to non-apprehension of the world in sleep, swoon, and so on, the location of the self has to be inferred. Even as the subtle forces like the electric current pass through visible wires, the light of awareness flows through a nadi veins in the body. The effulgent light of pure awareness, taking hold of a center, lights up the entire body as the sun illumines the world. Owing to the diffusion of that light in the body, one has experiences in the body. That center of radiation, the sages say, is the heart. From the play of forces in the nadis, one infers the flow of the light of awareness. The forces course through the body, each hugging its special nadi. The particular nadi through which pure awareness flows is called Sushumna. It is also called Atmanadi, Paranadi, and Amritanadi. As the light perverts the entire body, one gets attached to the body, mistakes the body for the self, and regards the world as different from oneself. When the discerning one renounces attachment and the identification of himself with the body and pursues one-pointed inquiry, the churning starts in the nadis. With the churning of the nadis, the self gets separated from the other nadis and clinging to the Amrita Nadi alone shines forth. When the effulgent light of awareness shines in Amrita Nadi alone, nothing else shines except the self. Anything that appears before such a jnani has no separate existence. He knows the self as clearly as the ignorant one, his body. He, for whom the Atman alone shines, within, without, and everywhere, as clearly as objects to the ignorant, is called one who has cut the nexus. The nexus is of twofold, one of the bond of the nadis, the other mental attachment. The perceiver, though subtle, perceives through the bond of the nadis the entire gross world. When the light, withdrawn from all the other nadis, dwells in one nadi alone, the bond between awareness and the body is sundered and the light abides as the self. As a heated iron ball appears as a ball of fire, this body heated in the fire of self-inquiry shines as the self. The old vasanas, tendencies pertaining to the body, mind and so on are destroyed. Being free from body consciousness, one never has the sense of doership. Since such a one has no sense of doership, his karma, it is said, is completely destroyed. As nothing but the self exists, no doubts arise for him. Once the knot is cut, one is never bound again. This is considered the state of power supreme and peace supreme. End of 9th chapter with 22 verses.